Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 26th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And later in the program, we'll talk with Mike Wolverton of K-State University about the energy markets. In agricultural news, the WTO says Mexico is using NAFTA to distort trade policies. House and Senate congressional panels are holding food safety hearings this week, and Colin Peterson wants better coordination among farm bill safety programs. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and are you having trouble keeping that weight loss promise you made at the beginning of the year? I am, but maybe, just maybe, USDA has a website that will give me and you a little help. Hey, just after the bottom of the hour, don't forget to join us when we talk with meteorologist Don Day about the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the Tuesday numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, the Kansas City Board of Trade, and starting at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, where the nearby March wheat contract, after rocketing higher yesterday, lost $1.60 today to settle at $22.40 a bushel. The numbers look like this in Chicago. March wheat at $11.99.5, up 90. That's the limit higher. May futures up the 90-cent limit at $12.14.5. And July futures at $11.36.5, up 90 cents. March wheat for the hard red in Kansas City at $12.57.25 top, or a settlement price up 90. July up 90 there as well at $12.15.75. Corn pit now. March contract $5.30.5, down 2.75 today. May futures at $5.44, down 3. July at $5.56.25, 2.5 lower. And December contract at $5.56.5, down 0.75 cents. March soybean futures at $14.66.75, up 14.75. The May at $14.84.25, up 15. And July up 12 cents at $14.97.5. November beans at $14.27, up a dime for the day. Live cattle futures settled $93.25, up 65. The March at $104.77.5, 57.5 cents higher for the afternoon. Lean hog futures finished the day like this at $60.75, and they were up 25 cents on the day. Outside markets like this, crude oil futures $100.90 a barrel, up $1.67. And the May futures at 98.70, down 18 cents. The CRB index at 405.25, that's 3.99 higher. The U.S. dollar down 0.689 at 74.813. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,712. It's just about 144 points higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A lake effect snow watch is in effect in a portion of northwestern Indiana. That through tomorrow afternoon. A snow advisory in effect for a small portion of east central Indiana until early tomorrow morning. Tonight, across the two-state region, Mike Sola says in the northern parts of Indiana, it'll be cloudy, some lake effect snow bands. In eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, some snow showers there. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, a few scattered flurries. Lows this evening will range from 10 in northwestern Illinois to 24 in the far southern parts of Illinois. Wednesday in the northern parts of Illinois, mostly sunny. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, a few widely scattered flurries. Highs will range from 22 in the north to near 40 in the far southern part of Illinois. The highlights over the next several days, the next weather system to affect the area will be late Thursday and early Friday with a clipper, which should bring a few snowfall areas to the northern half of Illinois and Indiana. Snowfall will be generally light, as moisture content will be less than 0.25 inches. Very little drying time will be available before yet another rain or snow system takes aim on the area. Computer models are in general agreement for a late Sunday arrival of a brand new system.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Please visit our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the line this afternoon from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, is John Hester. Wayne Nelson is away. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We better talk about the soybeans because they had, according to my compadre here at their radio station, the director of ag at WILL, Dave Dickey, quite an interesting day to finish higher, but they marched pretty low at one point.
Yes, everything this morning opened lower I think it was profit-taking, and also that the wheat last night had been up the limit at one time, and it had closed in the overnight session. It closed steady to down a little bit, and I think everybody was very nervous about, the grain market might follow suit today, and so in the overnight trade, beans were down 10 to 15, and corn was down 5 to 8. And then on the opening, beans opened down about 25 to 30, and corn was down roughly 15, and wheat was down and on the opening. And then it just seemed like after about 5 minutes of bouncing around, the bean meal and the wheat started rallying, and nearby wheat went from like down 25 to up 20 and just kept rallying, and that brought the bean market back when the meal and the wheat started rallying. And, you know, by mid-session, beans were trading pretty close to steady, and, you know, corn had came back mid-range. And then the longer the day progressed, I think there was bargain hunters coming in and thinking beans were a good value at that price, and ended up closing on contract highs today.
Indeed. Was part of that just being lifted by the wheat pit in Chicago, which ended the day at the limit higher, up 90 cents?
Oh, I think so. I think that's what started the beans coming back. And I think the wheat came back and the bean meal, what was it up? It was up like $5. So, it came back and... And then there was some rumors out that there was some dry weather where they plant wheat in China, that it's extremely dry there. And, you know, there was a few outside things that kind of fueled the market, gold being up $12. The dollar was down 78 cents today. Crude oil's up almost $1.75 right now. And, you know, them all are positive things to the grain market. And, you know, the wheat took off and lock limit up, and, you know, then the traders had to have something to trade, so they ran to the bean market and the corn market.
What was the most often asked question that you picked up from farmers as they called into your office?
I guess early on this morning, well, is it over? Is this the beginning of the end?
And your answer?
I didn't think so. I mean, I really thought the beans would do exactly what they did today, be a lot of buyers come in down 25 cents. And I happen to be right today. So, and another thing is, well, where do I sell? You know, they say, well, we sold too many beans at $10, and now they're $14. Do I sell more here? I'm afraid to sell anything.
That's an interesting comment, because I'd be surprised that many had sold very many beans at $10. Farmers tend to hang on to those things for the new crop year.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of people that thought $10 was the magic number, and a lot of people sold beans between $10 and $11.
All right,
and, you know, now they're unhappy because they sold them.
Well, a $10 sale can't be all that bad.
No,
John,
that's what I tell them. Better than a poke in the eye sometimes.
You betcha. Thanks, John, for
filling
in.
Hey, thank you a lot, Todd.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, filling in for Wayne Nelson this afternoon, who is away. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And you can find the Closing Market Report and a whole lot of other audio there. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll bring you today's agricultural news.
Thank you. In agricultural news, a World Trade Organization panel has found that Mexico's use of unilateral trade agreements, including the North America Free Trade Agreement, has resulted in trade-distorting policies. In a trade policy review of Mexico, the WTO concluded that nations' free trade deals, quote, has altered economic incentives and the allocation of resources and has made the administration of trade policy instruments more complicated. Mexico has 12 free trade deals involving 44 countries that cover 85% of its foreign trade. House and Senate congressional panels will hold hearings this week in the wake of the Westland Hallmark meat recall. Today, the House Energy and Commerce Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee is examining food contamination issues. And Thursday in the Senate, the Agricultural Appropriations Subcommittee will hear from USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer on why Westland Hallmark employees used cattle prods, forklifts, and fire hoses to get downer cattle into the food chain. The incidents were secretly recorded by the National Humane Society and resulted in the largest beef recall in U.S. history. Meanwhile, Hallmark Westland officials say they will probably shut down permanently. Federal regulators say they intend to require the processor to pay costs associated with destroying and replacing meat submitted to the National School Lunch Program. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says Farm Bill language under discussion does a poor job of coordinating revenue assurance, disaster aid, and crop insurance programs. Peterson says he will offer a new approach. One idea under consideration is to require producers to sign up for the disaster aid program in advance and require crop insurance as a condition of eligibility. Meanwhile, House Ways and Means Chairman Earl Pomeroy says Republican resistance to many tax measures has made selection of pay-fors in the Farm Bill difficult. Pay-fors is a term Congress uses to describe methods of paying for a bill. Pomeroy says he gives a Farm Bill deal by March 15th, in his words, a slightly better than even chance. March 15th is when the current extension on the 2002 Farm Bill expires. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Up next, in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says safety is always important when it comes to maintaining well water.
A clean, clear glass of cold water is something most Americans tend to take for granted. That is, until it's not available or it's not safe to consume or use in our daily lives. We think about water all the time on those occasions. Without a doubt, water is a dependable newsmaker. An overabundance of water is almost guaranteed to make the news. The flooding that followed Hurricane Katrina is the best example in recent years. Likewise, a lack of sufficient moisture attracts attention as well. A few years ago, a drought over much of the Great Plains made headlines regularly. Today, the record-breaking drought in much of the Southeast is probably the biggest water-related news story, as residents and government officials in those states grapple with difficult personal and policy choices as a result of nearly 2 years without consistent rainfall. The emergence of long-forgotten sunken boats, cars, and even the foundations of buildings exposed by the steady lowering of Lake Lanier's waterline has provided dramatic images of the drought's effects northeast of Atlanta. Given these contrasting reminders of water's powers to drown or reveal all that's in its path, it's wise to stop for a moment and consider a few issues related to water. Americans who receive their water from municipal water systems generally feel confident trained employees are monitoring water conditions regularly and taking steps to make water supplies usable. But people who depend on well water because they live in the country or other areas not served by water systems should take their own precautions. Performing regular checkups on wells safeguards water. That's the central message the National Groundwater Association conveys year-round. Residents who use well water should have a certified or licensed water well system contractor conduct a flow test, check water levels, and test for certain types of bacteria, nitrates, and anything of local concern according to the National Groundwater Association. In addition, homeowners and other individuals need to be aware of the dangers posed by abandoned wells and keep hazardous chemicals, septic systems, and kennels or livestock operations at least 50 feet away from their wells. It is also important to keep an eye on the cap or cover that seals a well to ensure it's securely attached and prevents insects, rodents, and other pests from entering. These tips and other resources, such as locating a National Groundwater Association certified or member contractor, may be found on a special website at www.wellowner.org. The National Groundwater Association designed just for well owners. The website also explains the hydrologic cycle and the use of geothermal energy for home heating and cooling. It provides videos of well construction methods. There's even a link to groundwater-related games and more for children. No matter where you live in this country, if you depend on well for your water, give some thought to the importance of its regular maintenance. A clean, clear glass of cold water depends on it. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call at 217-333-0850. You still need to lose a little weight? Check out the USDA. I'll have more on the USDA food pyramid, the data behind it, and a website called mypyramid.gov. We've all seen the food pyramid USDA publishes, but have you ever tried to use it? Let's try. First, we'll hit the USDA's My Pyramid website. The address is www.mypyramid.gov. Now, you'll find a colorful page and a greeting that says, "One size doesn't fit all. My Pyramid plans offer you a personal eating plan with the foods and amounts that are right for you." Cool. Now, on the right side of that page, you can click on My Pyramid Plan, which it says is a quick estimate of what and how much you need to eat. Done. Drop in your age, 43, your sex, male, your weight, dang, and your height, 5'9". Uh-oh, and how much physical activity you do during the week beyond the norm. Do you exercise? Then hit submit. Please note, the weight you entered is above the healthy range for your height. Yeah, I knew that. Would you like a food plan for A, your current weight, or B, to gradually move toward a healthier weight? B, please. And it tells me how many calories to consume, along with the approximated amounts from five food groups. 8 ounces from the grains, half preferably as whole grains. 3 cups of veggies a day, mix them up. 2 cups of fruit, 3 cups of milk, and 6.5 ounces of meat and beans. If I can do that, I'll lose weight gradually. The calorie count looks easy enough to meet. Think I'll give it a try. Maybe you should too. It's at www.mypyramid.gov. Now, if you want to know more about the data behind the pyramid, then there's another place to visit. University of Illinois nutritionist Karen Chapman Novakovsky says hit the Society for Nutrition Education website at sne.org. It has just published the My Pyramid e-catalog.
In this supplement, which was, you know, previously only available to members of the society or at universities with access who purchased the journal, right? It's now open access. And so that means that anyone who has an interest in finding out, for instance, why they decided on that design or the background for the recommendations or what might be coming up next can go and read about it for free at the jneb.org website.
She meant the sne.org website. It stands for Society for Nutrition Education. Look for the My Pyramid e-catalog link along the left-hand side of the page. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Mike Wolverton of Kansas State University, where he's an Extension grain analyst, now joins us to take up the biofuels markets here on the Closing Market Report for a Tuesday afternoon. Mike, thanks for joining us. I hear you're traveling today. Where are you?
I'm in McPherson, Kansas today, Todd. We talked to a bunch of agriculture producers this morning about crop insurance and what's going on in the grain markets.
Oh, well, we might have to take that up at a later date, but let's discuss the biofuels market. Where do you see that market and how it's changed in the last week and a half to 2 weeks?
Ethanol profit margins have slipped quite a bit. I did a calculation yesterday, and my hypothetical ethanol plant was making just 3 cents per gallon on ethanol, but they're more than making up for that with good profits on distillers' grain. So overall, we're still doing well, but this high-priced corn is really cutting into the ethanol margins.
How far out do you think that they've got themselves? And maybe we can just talk about your particular plant that you have in mind. How far out have you booked grain, and how far out do you think ethanol plants across the Midwest have booked their grain needs at this time?
Ordinarily, they work on what they call six-month strips. They will purchase their corn or, in Kansas, grain sorghum needs out 6 months in advance. And on the other side, they sell the ethanol out 6 months in advance, too. I'm not sure the distillers' grains are sold that far out, but because there's good daily demand from livestock feeders out here for distillers' grains. But so my hypothetical plant may be off quite a bit, particularly for those ethanol plants that have arranged to buy their corn at lower prices last fall.
What would you suggest might happen to the ethanol industry? Should we maintain a $5 and above corn market through the fall of this year?
Well, my calculations show that at current ethanol prices, they could have paid $5.44 per bushel for corn and still made money. And they were paying, by my calculation, $5.35. So they were in a profitable position. So they could go quite a while. As long as ethanol prices stay up, and of course it's pulled by oil price, they can pay quite a bit for corn. I know that they would like to see that corn price come down and see ethanol prices remain high, but no one knows for sure what's going to happen in those markets.
And then let's turn our attention to what you spoke to your Kansas corn growers about this morning and crop insurance. What kinds of suggestions did you have for them as we look forward to March the 15th?
Well, they're all looking at these high prices in the marketplace and wondering if they will stay high. And what we're telling them is to sell ahead as much as possible that they can cover the crop insurance. If they can capture these high prices, it's so much the better. Long term, what I'm telling producers is to expect lower prices long term, but probably not as low as we've seen in the past because production costs have gone up.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I just think that it's going to be 2 years of good crop harvest before we replenish these global supplies and see grain and oilseed prices come down to a great extent, although I think we're going to get a production response and see lower price next year harvest on all these crops.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Good to be here, Todd.
Mike Wolverton is the K-State Extension grain analyst. He's located in Manhattan, Kansas, normally. Talked to us today from McPherson, Kansas, where he was speaking to a group of farmers. That's a look at the biofuels market. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather. I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A judge has identified Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich as public official A in the upcoming fraud trial of a top fundraiser, and that puts the governor even closer to the ongoing criminal investigation. The federal government's case against Blagojevich fundraiser Tony Rezko includes assertions that Blagojevich offered a potential fundraiser government contracts or state legal work. He allegedly told another insider his loyalty would pay off. Blagojevich himself has not been accused of wrongdoing. He has claimed that he's not public official A, but a judge in Chicago this week linked the label with the governor. Rezko is charged with running a kickback scheme to aid Blagojevich. His trial starts Monday. Champaign City Council members will hear from the University of Illinois' chancellor tonight about his opposition to the upcoming unofficial St. Patrick's Day event. Richard Herman is asked to speak to the council at its regular meeting. The university has had to prepare for the likelihood of intoxicated students showing up to class on Friday. the first day of what is now a two-day unsanctioned drinking event sponsored by campus bars. Federal immigration officials in Chicago say they've arrested 30 illegal immigrants in Illinois with outstanding deportation orders as part of a six-state operation. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says there were about 225 arrests. The four-day operation ended Monday. The individuals arrested had outstanding deportation orders to 12 countries, including Mexico, Cuba, Guatemala, India, and Poland. The head of the Chanute Air Museum in Rantoul says a budget shortfall could force the facility to close by April. Jim Eldridge says the museum on the former Chanute Air Force Base lost a state grant and was forced to dip into reserves to promote an event last summer. He's asking for private funds to help tie the museum over to a planned event in April. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels will not end up serving on the jury in a civil case. The governor reported for jury duty today in Indianapolis, but was excused after enough jurors were chosen. He declined the $15 that jurors get if they show up, saying jury duty is a responsibility that comes with citizenship. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, we thought we were going to have a rough skate here in Champaign County last night. Didn't turn out too terribly bad. What can we look forward to for the rest of the week?
Well, the pattern is still going to stay somewhat unsettled. We've got quite an active jet stream out in the North Pacific and out and across western areas of Canada that will likely keep the weather pattern little unsettled as we head into early March. Now, with that said, I think we're probably done with the active weather for at least here a couple of days. Just don't expect it to last too long, as we'll probably have some chances for some shower activity. Unsettled, colder weather returning late in the weekend, and especially during that first half of next week, as there will be a rather significant wave of stormy weather coming out of the Rockies Sunday night and Monday, and that will head into the Midwest. So between now and then, not too bad, just a couple of snow showers Thursday and Friday with that larger system early next week.
And if you turn your attention to the south, what do things look like in Brazil and Argentina?
Well, last week we talked about those areas having some wet weather and maybe causing some short-term problems with the harvest due to wet conditions. Now, that is something that is going to be a little bit of a concern as we make our way through this week as well, as chances for shower activity, especially in Brazil, remain high, as well as the northern and northeastern areas of Argentina.
And the wheat-growing regions of the globe look like what to you?
Well, they don't look bad. Precipitation has been pretty decent. In fact, many areas, there's still a lot of snow cover in many areas of Russia, in areas of eastern Europe. One area that we are concerned about, the southern plains of the United States, although there has been some moisture over portions of some Kansas, some areas of Oklahoma and Texas, it's favored the eastern areas. Some of the winter wheat areas of western Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado could really use some moisture. They've been dry lately, and right now the prospects for moisture still look fairly low. That would be one area of concern.
Does that change very dramatically as we head into the spring months or not?
Well, March, typically, in that part of the country, does tend to get more wet and a little bit more stormy. So there could be help on the way, but at least for another week, it doesn't look like it.
Any place else that we ought to be keeping an eye on around the planet?
I think that pretty much does it, although there are still some good chances for more showers in Australia. Many areas down under still looking at some pretty decent chances of showers.
Don, thanks so much for staying with us today. We appreciate it. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
The WILL All Day Ag Outlook meeting is set for Tuesday, March 4th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We've got a terrific lineup, including nationally known speakers Dan Bossi and Glenn Ring. AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser will give us the early word on planning. We'll dig into estate planning with Bill Moore of WB Moore Incorporated, and we have panels on corn and soybeans. The cost is just $13 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch buffet. Registration begins at 8:15 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 7:15 a.m. Central. The 2008 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is made possible with support from the Andersons, Cargill, and the Archer Daniels Midland Company.